Chapter 99. Peaceable man, but I can't hear folks tell that of you. No, no. Apostrophe. When Sir Mulberry found coherent words to utter, Ralph bent forward with his hand to his ear, and a face as calm as if its every line of sternness had been cast in iron. When I am off this cursed bed, apostrophe, said the invalid, actually striking at his broken leg in the ecstasy of his passion, I'll have such revenge as never man had yet. By God, I will. Accident favoring him, he has marked me for a week or two, but I'll put a mark on him that he shall carry to his grave. I'll slit his nose and ears, flog him, maim him for life. I'll do more than that. I'll drag that pattern of chastity, that pink of prudery, the delicate sister, through apostrophe. It might have been that even Ralph's cold blood tingled in his cheeks at that moment. It might have been that Sir Mulberry remembered that, knave and usurer as he was, he must, in some early time of infancy, have twined his arm about her father's neck. He stopped, and menacing with his hand, confirmed the unuttered threat with a tremendous oath. It is a galling thing, apostrophe, said Ralph, after a short term of silence, during which he had eyed the sufferer keenly, to think that the man about town, the rake, the row, the rook of 20 seasons, should be brought to this pass by a mere boy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Sir Mulberry darted a wrathful look at him, but Ralph's eyes were bent upon the ground, and his face wore no other expression than one of thoughtfulness. A raw, slight stripling, apostrophe, continued Ralph, against a man whose very weight might crush him, to say nothing of his skill in I am right, I think, apostrophe, said Ralph, raising his eyes, you were a patron of the ring once, were you not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the sick man made an impatient gesture, which Ralph chose to consider as one of acquiescence. Ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, I thought so. That was before I knew you, but I was pretty sure I couldn't be mistaken. He is light and active, I suppose. But those were slight advantages compared with yours. Look, look. These hangdog outcasts have it. Apostrophe, he'll need the most he has, when I am well again, apostrophe, said Sir Mulberry Hawk, let him fly where he will. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Ralph quickly, he doesn't dream of that. He is here, good sir, waiting your pleasure, here in London, walking the streets at noonday, carrying it off jauntily, looking for you, I swear, apostrophe, said Ralph, his face darkening, and his own hatred getting the upper hand of him, for the first time, as this gay picture of Nicholas presented itself. If we were only citizens of a country where it could be safely done, I'd give good money, two of them stabbed to the heart, and rolled into the kennel for the dogs to tear. Apostrophe, as Ralph, somewhat to the surprise of his old client, vented this little piece of sound family feeling, and took up his hat preparatory to departing, Lord Frederick Verisopht looked in. Why, what in the devil's name, Hawk, have you and Nickleby been talking about? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the young man. I never heard such an insufferable riot. Croak, croak, croak. Bo, wow, wow. What has it all been about? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Sir Mulberry has been angry, my lord, apostrophe, said Ralph, looking towards the couch. Not about money, I hope? Nothing has gone wrong in business. Has it, Nickleby? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, my lord, no, apostrophe, returned Ralph. On that point we always agree. Sir Mulberry has been calling to mind the cause of apostrophe. There was neither necessity nor opportunity for Ralph to proceed, for Sir Mulberry took up the theme and vented his threats and oaths against Nicholas almost as ferociously as before. Ralph, who was no common observer, was surprised to see that as this tirade proceeded, the manner of Lord Frederick Verisopht, who at the commencement had been twirling his whiskers with a most dandified and listless air, underwent a complete alteration. He was still more surprised when, Sir Mulberry ceasing to speak, the young lord angrily, and almost unaffectedly, requested never to have the subject renewed in his presence. Mind that, Hawk. Apostrophe apostrophe he added, with unusual energy. I never will be a party to, or permit, if I can help it, a cowardly attack upon this young fellow. Apostrophe, cowardly. Apostrophe apostrophe interrupted his friend. Yes, apostrophe said the other, turning full upon him. If you had told him who you were, if you had given him your card, and found out, afterwards, that his station or character prevented your fighting him, it would have been bad enough then. Upon my soul, it would have been bad enough then. As it is, you did wrong. I did wrong too, not to interfere, and I am sorry for it. What happened to you afterwards was as much the consequence of accident as design, and more your fault than his, and it shall not, with my knowledge, be cruelly visited upon him, it shall not indeed. Apostrophe, with this emphatic repetition of his concluding words, the young lord turned upon his heel, but before he had reached the adjoining room he turned back again, and said, with even greater vehemence than he had displayed before, I do believe, now, upon my honor I do believe, that the sister is as virtuous and modest a young lady as she is a handsome one. And of the brother, I say this, that he acted as her brother should, and in a manly and spirited manner. And I only wish, with all my heart and soul, that any one of us came out of this matter half as well as he does. Apostrophe, so saying, Lord Frederick Verisopht walked out of the room, leaving Ralph Nickleby and Sir Mulberry in most unpleasant astonishment. Is this your pupil? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Ralph, softly, or as he come fresh from some country parson. Apostrophe, apostrophe, green fools take these fits sometimes, apostrophe, replied Sir Mulberry Hawk, biting his lip, and pointing to the door. Leave him to me. Apostrophe, Ralph exchanged a familiar look with his old acquaintance, for they had suddenly grown confidential again in this alarming surprise, and took his way home, thoughtfully and slowly. While these things were being said and done, and long before they were concluded, the omnibus had disgorged Miss La Creevy and her escort, and they had arrived at her own door. Now, the good nature of the little miniature painter would by no means allow of Smike's walking back again, until he had been previously refreshed with just a sip of something comfortable, and a mixed biscuit or so. And Smike, entertaining no objection either to the sip of something comfortable, or the mixed biscuit, but, considering on the contrary, that they would be a very pleasant preparation for a walk to Bow, it fell out that he delayed much longer than he originally intended, and that it was some half hour after dusk when he set forth on his journey home. There was no likelihood of his losing his way, for it lay quite straight before him, and he had walked into town with Nicholas, and back alone, almost every day. So, Miss La Creevy and he shook hands with mutual confidence, and, being charged with more kind remembrances to Mrs. and Miss Nickleby, Smike started off. At the foot of Ludgate Hill, he turned a little out of the road, to satisfy his curiosity by having a look at Newgate. After staring up at the somber walls, from the opposite side of the way, with great care and dread for some minutes, he turned back again into the old track, and walked briskly through the city, stopping now and then, to gaze in at the window of some particularly attractive shop, then running for a little way, then stopping again, and so on, as any other country lad might do. He had been gazing for a long time through a jeweler's window, wishing he could take some of the beautiful trinkets home as a present, and imagining what delight they would afford if he could, when the clocks struck 8:15. Roused by the sound, he hurried on at a very quick pace, and was crossing the corner of a by street, when he felt himself violently brought to, with a jerk so sudden, that he was obliged to cling to a lamp post to save himself from falling. At the same moment, a small boy clung tight round his leg, and a shrill cry of "Here he is, father! Hooray!" apostrophe vibrated in his ears. Smike knew that voice too well. He cast his despairing eyes downward towards the form from which it had proceeded, and, shuddering from head to foot, looked round. Mr. Squeers had hooked him in the coat collar with the handle of his umbrella, and was hanging on at the other end with all his might and main. The cry of triumph proceeded from Master Wackford, who, regardless of all his kicks and struggles, clung to him with the tenacity of a bulldog. One glance showed him this, and in that one glance the terrified creature became utterly powerless, and unable to utter a sound. Here's a go! ' cried Mr. Squeers, gradually coming hand over hand down the umbrella, and only unhooking it when he had got tight hold of the victim's collar. Here's a delicious go! Wackford, my boy, call up one of them coaches! A coach, father! ' cried little Wackford. Yes, a coach, sir, replied Squeers, feasting his eyes upon the countenance of Smike. Damn the expense. Let's have him in a coach. What's he been a-doing of? Asked a laborer with a hod of bricks, against whom and a fellow laborer Mr. Squeers had backed, on the first jerk of the umbrella. Everything. ' replied Mr. Squeers, looking fixedly at his old pupil in a sort of rapturous trance. Everything running away, sir, joining in bloodthirsty attacks upon his master, there's nothing that's bad, that he hasn't done. Oh, what a delicious go is this here, good lord! The man looked from Squeers to Smike, but such mental faculties as the poor fellow possessed had utterly deserted him. The coach came up, Master Wackford entered, Squeers pushed in his prize, and following close at his heels, pulled up the glasses. The coachman mounted his box, and drove slowly off, leaving the two bricklayers, and an old apple woman, and a town-made little boy returning from an evening school, who had been the only witnesses of the scene, to meditate upon it at their leisure. Mr. Squeers sat himself down on the opposite seat to the unfortunate Smike, and, planting his hands firmly on his knees, looked at him for some 5 minutes, when, seeming to recover from his trance, he uttered a loud laugh, and slapped his old pupil's face several times, taking the right and left sides alternately. It isn't a dream. Said Squeers. That's real flesh and blood. I know the feel of it. And being quite assured of his good fortune by these experiments, Mr. Squeers administered a few boxes on the ear, lest the entertainments should seem to partake of sameness, and laughed louder and longer at every one. Your mother will be fit to jump out of her skin, my boy, when she hears of this, said Squeers to his son. Oh, won't she though, father? replied Master Wackford. To think, said Squeers, that you and me should be turning out of a street, and come upon him at the very nick, and that I should have him tight, at only one cast of the umbrella, as if I had hooked him with a grappling iron. Ha, ha! Didn't I catch hold of his leg, neither, father? Said little Wackford. You did. Like a good un, my boy, said Mr. Squeers, patting his son's head, and you shall have the best button over jacket and waistcoat that the next new boy brings down, as a reward of merit. Mind that. You always keep on in the same path, and do them things that you see your father do, and when you die you'll go right slap to heaven, and no questions asked. Improving the occasion in these words, Mr. Squeers patted his son's head again, and then patted Smike's butt harder, and inquired in a bantering tone, how he found himself by this time. I must go home, replied Smike, looking wildly round. To be sure you must. You're about right there, replied Mr. Squeers. You'll go home very soon, you will. You will find yourself at the peaceful village of Dotheboys, in Yorkshire, in something under a week's time, my young friend. And the next time you get away from there, I give you leave to keep away. Where's the clothes you run off in, you ungrateful robber? Said Mr. Squeers, in a severe voice. Smike glanced at the neat attire which the care of Nicholas had provided for him, and wrung his hands. Do you know that I could hang you up, outside of the Old Bailey, for making away with them articles of property? Apostrophe apostrophe said Squeers. Do you know that it's a hanging matter, and I ain't quite certain whether it ain't an anatomy one besides to walk off with a parts of the valley of £5 from a dwelling house? Eh? Do you know that? What do you suppose was the worth of them clothes you had? Do you know that that Wellington boot he wore cost 8 and 20 shillings when it was a pair, and the shoe 7 and 6? But you came to the right shop for mercy when you came to me, and thank your stars that it is me as has got to serve you with the article. Apostrophe, anybody not in Mr. Squeer's confidence would have supposed that he was quite out of the article in question, instead of having a large stock on hand ready for all comers. Nor would the opinion of skeptical persons have undergone much alteration when he followed up the remark by poking Smike in the chest with the ferrule of his umbrella, and dealing a smart shower of blows with the ribs of the same instrument upon his head and shoulders. I never threshed a boy in a hackney coach before, apostrophe said Mr. Squeers, when he stopped to rest. There's inconveniency in it, but the novelty gives it a sort of relish too. Apostrophe apostrophe, poor Smike. He warded off the blows as well as he could, and now shrunk into a corner of the coach, with his head resting on his hands, and his elbows on his knees. He was stunned and stupefied, and had no more idea that any act of his would enable him to escape from the all-powerful Squeers, now that he had no friend to speak to or to advise with, than he had had in all the weary years of his Yorkshire life which preceded the arrival of Nicholas. The journey seemed endless. Street after street was entered and left behind, and still they went jolting on. At last Mr. Squeers began to thrust his head out of the window every half minute, and to bawl a variety of directions to the coachman, and after passing, with some difficulty, through several mean streets which the appearance of the houses and the bad state of the road denoted to have been recently built, Mr. Squeers suddenly tugged at the check string with all his might, and cried, "Stop!" Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.